The Personal History and Experience of David Copperfield the Younger by Charles Dickens, page 186. Chapter 19. I look about me and make a discovery. I'm doubtful whether I was at heart glad or sorry when my school days drew to an end and the time came for my leaving Dr. Strong's. I had been very happy there. I had a great attachment for the doctor, and I was eminent and distinguished in that little world. For these reasons, I was sorry to go, but for other reasons, unsubstantial enough, I was glad. Misty ideas of being a young man at my own disposal, of the importance attaching to a young man at his own disposal, of the wonderful things to be seen and done by that magnificent animal, and the wonderful effects he could not fail to make upon society lured me away. So powerful were these visionary considerations in my boyish mind that I seem, according to my present way of thinking, to have left school without natural regret. The separation has not made the impression on me that other separations have. I try in vain to recall how I felt about it and what its circumstances were, but it is not momentous in my recollection. I suppose the opening prospect confused me. I know that my juvenile experiences went for little or nothing then, and that life was more like a great fairy story which I was just about to begin to read than anything else. My aunt and I had held many grave deliberations on the calling to which I should be devoted. For a year or more, I had endeavoured to find a satisfactory answer to her often repeated question. What would I like to be? But I had no particular liking that I could discover for anything. If I could have been inspired with a knowledge of the science of navigation, taken the command of a fast-sailing expedition, and gone round the world on a triumphant voyage of discovery, I think I might have considered myself completely suited. But, in the absence of any such miraculous provision, my desire was to apply myself to some pursuit that would not lie too heavily upon her purse, and to do my duty in it, whatever it might be. Mr. Dick had regularly assisted at our councils, with a meditative and sage demeanour. He never made a suggestion but once, and on that occasion, I don't know what put it in his head, he suddenly proposed that I should be a brazier. My aunt received this proposal so very ungraciously that he never ventured on a second, but ever afterwards confined himself to looking watchfully at her for her suggestions and rattling his money. "Trot, I tell you what, my dear," said my aunt, one morning in the Christmas season when I left school. "As this knotty point is still unsettled, and as we must not make a mistake in our decision if we can help it, I think we had better take a little breathing time. In the meanwhile, you must try to look at it from a new point of view, and not as a schoolboy."
"I will, Aunt."
"It has occurred to me," pursued my aunt, "that a little change and a glimpse of life out of doors may be useful in helping you to know your own mind and form a cooler judgment. Suppose you were to go down into the old part of the country again, for instance, and see that out-of-the-way woman with the savagest of names," said my aunt, rubbing her nose, for she could never thoroughly forgive Peggotty for being so called.
"Of all things in the world, Aunt, I should like it best."
"Well," said my aunt, "that's lucky, for I should like it too. But it's natural and rational that you should like it, and I am very well persuaded that whatever you do, Trot, will always be natural and rational."
"I hope so, Aunt."
"Your sister, Betsy Trotwood," said my aunt, "would have been as natural and rational a girl as ever breathed. You'll be worthy of her, won't you?"
"I hope I shall be worthy of you, Aunt. That will be enough for me."